security operations for the Papua New Guinea general election. So that claims that the full mandated budget hasn't been provided for police to run security. What's the story behind this?
Yeah, well, things are really livening up. You know, the elections are next month and they run for about 4 weeks and the campaign is really full on. And the cracks have been showing in the coalition government of Peter O'Neill already. So we've had the National Alliance Party leader who's he was he's the Treasury Minister in O'Neill's government at the moment, Patrick Broich, and he's been accused of backstabbing his own national government by claiming that, the police haven't had enough money. He says that he was told by the police commissioner, Gary Barkey, that they've only been given $8 million for the elections and the budget allocation was $121 million kina, which is considerably less than New Zealand dollars, but still a fairly substantial figure. But probably even more interesting, O'Neill denies this, of course. He says, oh, yes, well, the police have been given enough to fund the elections, and security is going to be a huge issue right through the election campaign that's going at the moment and also the elections themselves. But there's an interesting story that's really broken over this weekend with a whole lot of social media running pictures of expatriate armed militia, the appear to be a militia. Nobody seems to know who they are or what they're doing. Heavily built guys, flak jackets, heavily armed, and one of the pictures that I've seen is that have been cavorting with police. So people just wonder what's all this about. And various online news services are sort of investigating, but there hasn't been much in the mainstream media about it yet. And of course, people think back to 1997 when there was the Sandline crisis, when the Sirleaf Chan government at the time hired mercenaries to come in to fight for the government in the Bougainville War. 44 mercenaries were brought in from Australia, South Africa, and the UK. And there was a major uproar, and the military, the PNG military, seized all these mercenaries, arrested them, and then Sirleaf Chan was forced to resign a month later. So if we see armed men wandering around in Papua New Guinea, expatriates, one immediately thinks of mercenaries and so on. So it'd be very interesting to see what's going to evolve out of this.
Absolutely. And so the next story we have, yesterday was the 30th anniversary of the original Fiji coup by then Lieutenant Colonel Sitiveni Rambuka. What does this mean for Fiji 3 decades later?
Well, sadly, of course, you know, Rambuka, he unleashed the genie out of the bottle with the first coups, the first two coups, in fact, because he staged two coups in 1987. The first one on the 14th of May 1987, which anniversary was yesterday, and he's still a prominent player, of course, in Fiji. But then we've had a coup culture, as a lot of commentators describe it, leading to attempted coup in 2000, and then Bainimarama's own coup in 1990, which was staged quite 2006. Although he, of course, won the elections in 2014, Bainimarama is now the legitimate prime minister. But it sort of basically polarized the country. I don't think Fiji even today has really recovered from all these coups. Bainimarama claimed that his coup was going to be the one that ended all coups, but the country is still deeply divided. Until there's genuine freedom of speech media industry development decree, which is just a military law imposed by Bainimarama, unless that's waived, and people have normal political discussion, the country is going to remain polarized. I guess Bainimarama really hopes that his international diplomacy, if you like. He staged a bit of a coup in getting the COP23 this year so that Fiji is a co-host of the climate change conference in Bonn in November. He's hoping that these international initiatives will allay resentment within the country, but essentially those original coups about 30 years ago just caused so much mayhem for Fiji and caused a lot of hardship for many people.
Absolutely. We've also been talking already on the show today about this Manus Island shooting that happened on Good Friday, and that you were talking about that kind of credibility gap between what the Australian Immigration and the Papua New Guinea Police was saying. compared to Amnesty International and other human rights agencies?
Yes, well, here, I mean, it's basically it's a major credibility gap. The Australian government generally, very few people that I've ever come across believe much of what has comes out of the Canberra on the detention centres. This particular report that came out from Amnesty called "In the Firing Line," which basically it's a forensic report about what happened then on the 14th of April. And completely sort of refutes what the immigration department's been saying in Australia. But the point is that the detention centres in both Manus and Nauru were inherently abusive system put in place by the Australian government, and they have to be dismantled. And although the Australian government has said that it's going to be closed later, Amnesty International is saying no, shut it down now. Basically, they've got to shut it down now. It's just too many human rights violations that have been carried out. Also, Amnesty International is calling for a prompt, independent, impartial and effective investigation into what happened on Good Friday.
Great. And the last story that we have today, exiled West Papuan MP Benny Wanita visited New Zealand this past week. This was an attempt, you've said, to gag the West Papuan issue from discussion at the UNESCO World Press Freedom Day conference in Jakarta. How does that come about, and what's been achieved with that?
Well, I think Benny's visit here has been enormously successful. We at AUT actually had a seminar on the Tuesday evening, and that was absolutely packed out with a wide range of people. The international interest in the whole West Papua situation has just taken off so much in the last couple of years, and people like Benny, he's an inspirational speaker. He's quite charismatic. He, you know, usually in the public meetings, he's got this crown of bird of paradise feathers, very, very dramatic looking. He is of course a traditional chief, as well as being a member of parliament in West Papua before being exiled to the UK. But his main message was in the week in New Zealand is that, well, New Zealand should stand up alongside the Pacific countries, seven Pacific countries that have been calling for a new United Nations independent referendum on self-determination for the West Papuan people. But whether I can't see the current government doing that, but if there's a change of government, there's a chance. But certainly I think that most people who've looked into the West Papua issue would certainly stand behind Benny Wanita and say, yes, this is exactly what New Zealand should be doing. We should be standing up for human rights in the region.
Perfect. Thank you so much, David. We'll talk to you or Kendall again next week.
Great. Thanks a lot, Amanda. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
That was the Southern Cross.
That was AUT Pacific Media Centre Director David Roby live with all the latest in Pacific news for Southern Cross.